This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. I asked Lee David Zimmerman, the author of Americana Music, Voices, Visionaries, and Pioneers of an Honest Sound, what song I should start our interview with. He said, The Byrds, You Ain't Going Nowhere. This is a Bob Dylan song released by the Byrds in April 1968. Zimmerman says this was a revolutionary shift. Some American performers were rejecting the British rock invasion and embracing their domestic musical roots.
Well, I think for one thing, it really represents that incredible transition. The Byrds were, of course, one of the earliest folk rock bands in the upsurge in, you know, California West Coast music in the mid-60s. And early on, they recorded several Bob Dylan songs, Mr. Tambourine Man being one of the most significant. But they continued to do that throughout their career. And then when this album came along, Sweethearts of the Rodeo, it showed them really crossing the divide from the folky sounds of before into a new terrain that really hadn't been brought about before. This crossover from rock and roll, the long hairs, the hippies, to traditional country music, which at that time was very particular to Nashville and to old-time musicians who really had no contact with these young upstarts. So that song in particular, it was a Bob Dylan song, but it was laced with pedal steel guitar. It still had the harmonies that the Byrds had perfected so early on. But with the twang that they brought into it, it really became more of a country rock kind of song. It was a totally different sound for the band, and at the same time, it really heralded in a lot of changes in the pop culture overall.
Oh, oh, are we gonna fly down in the easy chair? Now Genghis Khan, he could not keep all his kings supplied with sleep. We'll climb that hill no matter how steep. Then we get up to
journalism as a music journalist, and you've talked to the members of the Byrds. What did they tell you that they thought they were doing when they crafted this song?
Well, the main instigator for this was Gram Parsons, who many people refer to as the Cosmic Cowboy. He was originally a folkie himself. He was raised in Florida. And when he came west, he fell in with some other bands that were kind of fledgling country bands. And then he hooked up with Roger McGuinn and Chris Hillman of the Byrds. And McGuinn and Hillman really allowed him to steer their direction, into these archival country sounds. So that album in particular, Sweethearts of the Rodeo, was a great collaboration between those guys. At that point, David Crosby had left the group, and Gene Clark, the original singer of the band, had left the group. So there was an opportunity for Gram Parsons to come in and really take control. And it was his influence that really dictated the direction of that album. And he would continue to do that when he left the band and formed the Flying Burrito Brothers. So you can credit Gram Parsons with a lot of this, a lot of these changes, with a real segue here.
Here is the Flying Burrito Brothers, also with a Dylan cover from 1971, to Ramona.
Ramona, come closer, shed softly your water, yeah. The pains of your sadness will pass as your senses will rise. But the flowers of the city, though breath-like, get death-like in time. And there's no use in trying to deal with the dying, though I cannot explain that in line. Your cracked country lips, I still wish to.
I was kind of, you know, when I asked you what would be a great iconic song to kick this off with, I never thought that you would be calling for the Byrds. I was thinking more of the older music, Woody Guthrie or Pete Seeger or Jimmy Rogers, or not really prepared for that selection. So is this like a typical type of, you think of starting point when people talk about Americana?
Well, in my book, the purpose of my book was to kind of try to put some kind of definition on Americana. So I have to say, a lot of this is my perspective. I remember in the late 60s and early 70s, listening to bands like the Byrds and the Flying Burrito Brothers and Poco and the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band. And at that time, people were saying, oh, it's country rock. They weren't quite sure because it was so new. But when I came up with the idea of this book, I wanted to put a definition on where today's use of the term Americana really began. I mean, let's face it, Americana can define a whole spectrum of music, of culture, of everything else. It's a widely used term these days. It's almost become a cliche. So for that reason, I really wanted to nail it down. I wanted to say this is really what Americana was, where it began as a popular force. I do go back and I talk about Ralph Stanley, who I had the opportunity to interview. I talk about bluegrass. I talk about blues. I talk about the heritage of the South, Mississippi, but you know that's Americana without a doubt. Americana can be traced back to the beginnings. Well, actually, if you want to go back to the 19th century with Stephen Foster, but that's a very, very wide field. And my goal was to define it in a popular sense, in the sense of what we listen to as music enthusiasts in the current day and age. And that's why I went back there. Now, I chose that song because I think it's a good representation, but at the same time, there are a lot of other songs I could have chosen. I could have singled out The Band, for example, a wonderful group of musicians, most of them from Canada, but they really got into this sort of vintage style, this sort of arcane old-time style. So I could have chosen something from The Band. I could have chosen something from Nitty Gritty Dirt Band. There's a host of examples we could use. But I like the example of the Byrds because it's a very, very clear definition of how a band transitioned from a sort of folk rock group who had lots of hits on the radio, who became very popular in the mainstream, and then took this daring chance to go into this new realm of country music. So I kind of think they deserve credit for daring to do that.
We're taking a break, but first, the band got name checked. Let's hear them with the Dylan song, recorded in 1986 but not released until 1996 on their penultimate album, High on the Hog. It's Forever Young.
May God bless you.
Back to The Source on Texas Public Radio. We're talking with Lee David Zimmerman, author of Americana Music, Voices, Visionaries, and Pioneers of an Honest Sound. This is the Cowboy Junkies with their take on Towns Van Zandt's The Highway Kind.
Monday is the day of the highway kind.
Americana Music, as you say, is a complex title, handle for
yep.
a brand of music, a genre. But this is something I run into all the time when I talk to people who write about music. And there are titles for a brand of music which make no sense. Progressive music, that doesn't really mean anything, but people know what it is when you say it. You know, punk rock or disco or all these things. It's just a title, and then people have now understand what it is that you're saying when you throw that title out there. So when
right.
I say Americana music and people understand what it is that I'm saying, what are the attributes of something that makes it Americana?
Well, in my mind, it's something that kind of takes it off of the back porch. Where I live here in East Tennessee, we're very fond of bluegrass, of pickers, of banjo players and dulcimer players who kind of sit around in a communal circle and sing songs that can be traced back to the first settlers in Appalachia. It's a really archival form of folk music. But I think today, when we define Americana, or we attempt to define Americana, because I don't want to be presumptuous and say, this is what it is. I don't want to put it in that box. But I think broadly, overall, Americana music represents a sound that you can hear at festivals, that you can go to hear at concerts, that works its way into the popular idiom. And it has that reverence for tradition, and yet it still has contemporary credence. I'm using words here that I often use when I write because they have a certain amount of alliteration. Reverence for the roots and contemporary credence. So they can't be confined to old-timey music, and at the same time, It's certainly not the kind of thing that you're going to hear on a contemporary pop station or see on Saturday Night Live, for example. This is music that has solid melody, that has very, very solid instrumental support, that it's played by pros and it has substance, and yet the melodies are relatable to a contemporary audience. You can sing along, you can get into the hooks, you can sing along with the choruses. So it's not necessarily tied to one particular time. You can't say, oh, that's grandpa's music or whatever you want to say. It's music that's still reverent today, relevant today, I should say, but at the same time, it still has substance, it still has a foundation, it still has roots that you can trace back to an earlier generation, if you will.
We gotta play some Carter Family. This is from 1936, Cannonball Blues.
Oh, listen to the train coming down the line, trying to make up all of her lost time from Buffalo to Washington. You can wash my jumper, starch my overhaul, catch the train they call a cannonball from Buffalo to Washington.
I was talking to Ray Benson of Asleep at the Wheel, and he says, well, I don't know what we do, but when they have a little label they put on it, Americana Music, people know where to look for it. And you go to the record store, and there's the bin over there for Americana Music, and you're going to find us there. And so it does help match people up who like this type of music with that type of music. Maybe a clumsy fit, but it works.
We always tend to put things in boxes and try to define things by the very narrowest definition. Some of our most revered musicians throughout history have been those that have broken through those boundaries and have done something new and refused to be confined to any particular niche. So I think that when we talk about Americana, we have to, okay, we're kind of putting a definition on it, but we also have to realize that these musicians that were key to the creation of what I call Americana music, what a lot of people these days are calling Americana music, that those musicians helped expand the parameters themselves just by forging this alliance between rock and country. That was, look, if you go back 50 years, when some of these albums like Sweetheart of the Rodeo or the first Flying Burrito Brothers album came out, or the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band album, Will the Circle Be Unbroken, when those albums came out, believe it or not, they were revolutionary. There were folks in Nashville who were accusing these rock and rollers practically of heresy. And when the Byrds and the Dirt Band went to Nashville and attempted to perform at the Grand Ole Opry, I mean, people were just not happy. They were saying, what are these hippies doing up there? There was a lot of backlash. So it was a very brave thing for these artists to try to, you know, merge into this different style and to pay homage to these traditional styles, and at the same time, be who they were.
I was standing by my window on one cold and cloudy day when I saw thee.
There's a fair
we mentioned Bob Dylan. And so is we do you say Bob Dylan is an Americana artist, or he's just Bob Dylan?
He's an American icon, a world icon. But Dylan played a major role in this transition to Americana. First of all, with the album John Wesley Harding, which kind of took him into a more sort of, for lack of a better term, sort of a backwoods kind of environment, where he was telling stories of these sort of Western country fictional characters. His main breakthrough, though, as far as this music is concerned, was with the album Nashville Skyline, which he actually went to Nashville and which he actually recorded right there in these studios where all this country music, this traditional country music, had been recorded before. More significantly, he hooked up with Johnny Cash. And Johnny Cash, who was a hero to country and Western fans, even though Johnny was a real rebel down deep, Johnny Cash was willing to embrace Dylan and say, you know, I like what this guy's doing. I let's welcome him into our setting here. And together, they recorded several songs, a couple of which have been released, which, again, it was unthinkable back then. Johnny Cash, you know, who was this country Western singer, and Bob Dylan, who was this young folk protest hippie, and the two of them getting together, it was almost unthinkable. But they proved that it didn't matter, that if there's a common love of the music and of the template, that they could work together and make some magic all on their own. So it was the album Nashville Skyline, I think, that also had a major role in fusing these two traditions. And Dylan's voice had changed, and he was crooning, and he was singing these songs with pedal steel guitar. And then, you know, earlier than that, he had worked with the band, who I mentioned before. He had worked with the band in creating these sort of archival sounding songs. So, gotta credit Dylan. I mean, you may love him, you may hate him, but the guy has always been a pioneer and has been fearless in moving forward. And he certainly moved forward in terms of this new entrance into Americana, country rock, whatever you want to call it.
If you're traveling to the North Country Fair, where the winds hit heavy on the borderline, remember me to one who lives there. For she once was a true love of mine. See for me that her hair's hanging long. It curls and falls all down her breast. See for me that her hair's hanging long. That's the way I remember her best. If you go where the snowflakes fall, when the rivers freeze and summer ends, please see for me if she's wearing a coat so warm to keep her from the howling.
A lot of rock and rollers dip back into Americana music to revitalize their voice. I think of like Bruce Springsteen with like Nebraska and other albums that he's produced. It's just, why do you think that is?
Well, I think after a while, I think that when you're young and you're playing rock and roll, you tend to be rebellious. You tend to want to make a statement. You tend to want to kind of strike back at authority and kind of shove a middle finger in their face and be outrageous or what have you. But I think that as you mature, or as most artists mature, they, well, like any of us, when you grow up, you get a little more reverent. You get a little more appreciative of tradition and what's come before. And I think it's a natural process, what Springsteen did. Look, you can look at Elvis Costello, who in the late 70s was this little snotty, rebellious rock and roller. And a few years later, he made a country album. I think they're just, after going after what they want to say and creating their own form of expression, I think after a while, it's only natural that they sort of turn around and look at what came before, look at the roots, and they develop an appreciation for it.
Let's go to break with Bruce Springsteen getting Americana in Nebraska. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll continue our conversation about Americana music when we come back.
I saw her standing on her front lawn, just a twirling her baton. Me and her went for a ride in Tennessee. People down from a town of Lincoln, Nebraska, with a sawed-off 410 on my lap, through the badlands of Wyoming, I killed everything in my path.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. We're exploring Americana music with author Lee David Zimmerman.
I ain't got no home, I'm just a roaming round. Just a wandering worker, I go from town to town. And the police make it hard wherever I may go. And I ain't got no home in this world anymore.
When you get Americana musicians together, there is a certain songbook that they all know. They all, you can say a song, the title song, and they're ready to play it with the drop of a hat. And I think a lot of that, yeah. Everyone knows the catalog of Woody Guthrie.
Sure, yeah.
So how influential is he in Americana, American music?
Well, I mean, without a doubt, one of the most influential artists of all time. And as you were saying just now, many of his songs are still standards. And so when musicians get together and they want to jam, or they want to sort of just, you know, feel things out, a Woody Guthrie song is an excellent place to begin. He was a populist hero. He was a man of the people who took the troubles, the Dust Bowl and the deprivation of the American farmer and the struggles that many of the many Americans had during his era, and he put their troubles and their thoughts into words. And that's a real populist precept. There's that alliteration again. It's an avenue that's still being followed these days. For example, a lot of these artists are often seen at festivals, whether it's the Telluride Bluegrass Festival, or it's Merle Fest, or it's some kind of traditional gathering. A lot of these artists congregate there. and fans follow them. It's almost like the Deadhead syndrome, where the Deadheads would follow the Dead from venue to venue throughout the country. Well, nowadays, we're kind of seeing that again. A lot of these bands have followers, and the festivals seem to be an important spot for them to gather and congregate and mingle and catch up with friends, and at the same time watch bands that they feel connected to. And it's, and I call it the new populism. I think that Woody Guthrie started a whole populist movement back in his time by being the voice of the common man. So this is a common thread that Woody Guthrie helped instigate, that people like Pete Seeger and Dylan himself, a lot of the folk singers from the late 50s and early 60s, they helped propagate it. It's a continuing thread that I think has become a vital part of the enthusiasm for Americana music.
Well, I'm gonna tell you fascists, you may be surprised. People in this world are getting organized. You're bound to lose, you fascists bound to lose.
Woo! All you fascists bound to lose.
I said,
all you fascists bound to lose.
Yes.
All you fascists bound to lose. You're bound to lose, you fascists bound to lose.
There's people of every nation marching side by side, marching across the fields where a million fascists died. You're bound to lose, you fascists bound to lose.
All of you fascists bound to lose.
Yes.
All of you fascists bound to lose.
I said,
all of you fascists bound to lose. You're bound to lose, you fascists bound to lose. I said, all of you fascists bound to lose.
Right, but we have that one thread of, you just mentioned, like Woody Guthrie and Pete Seeger, and then we have other threads that come into it and start developing a stronger chord. Things like Hank Williams or Merle
absolutely.
Travis or
sure.
Lefty Frizzell, other singers with points of view. They all have dirt under their fingernails. They're all singing about the American experience, coming at it from different directions, but it seems like now it's all part of what we now identify as Americana music.
Well, I think one person that you could mention in that list of great names would be Merle Haggard. And it's almost ironic because, what was it, back in the 60s, he did a song called Okie from Muskogee, and he said, you know, we don't wear our hair long, and we salute the flag, and we don't smoke pot, and everything else. He was like almost like a pro-establishment kind of guy. As it turned out, as he later admitted, that song was kind of a parody. But the irony is that here's this guy that was really sort of representative of the typical middle class and good, solid, moral majority folks. And at the same time, he turned out to be a real rebel. I mean, evidenced by the fact that he joined with Willie Nelson and Waylon Jennings and Kris Kristofferson and sort of developed a new strain of country music called outlaw country. And they were decidedly of the rebellious variety. So I think Merle Haggard sort of created a little strain, as did Willie and Waylon, in terms of the insurgent sound, the kind of, well, screw y'all, that sort of upraised middle finger.
It's a big job just getting by with 9 kids and a wife, but I've been working, man, dang near all my life, and I'll keep on working long as my two hands are fit to use. I'll drink my beer in a tavern, sing a little bit of these working man blues. I'll keep my nose on the grindstone, work hard every day. I might get a little tired on the weekend. After I draw my pay, I'll go back working. Come Monday morning, I'm right back with the crew. I drank a little beer that evening, sang a little bit of these working man blues.
I think a lot of the artists you mentioned Hank Williams. Now, Hank Williams, again, man, I mean, he died on the cusp of the rock and roll revolution. I think, if I'm not mistaken, he died like in 1949, 1950, tragically young. But at the same time, he created a set of standards that, again, are still being played today. And those are, again, the kind of songs that musicians congregate. They can always dig out a Hank Williams song and find common ground there. So you look back at certain individuals and you got to say, well, Hank Williams, above and beyond, very, very important.
I wondered so aimless, life filled with sin. I wouldn't let my dear Savior in. Then Jesus came like a stranger in the night. Praise the Lord, I saw the light. I saw the light, I saw the light. No more darkness, no more night. Now I'm so happy, no sorrow inside. Praise the Lord, I saw the light.
There is the element of church music, praise music, in Americana
yep.
music as well. And as you talk about the outlaw and the Hellraiser brand of of it, but there's also an element of Sunday going praise.
Yep, exactly. You know, I think what you'll find with a lot of these artists, that despite their seemingly rebellious ways and their individuality, many, many musicians, I think, have a common core in religion, spirituality, and it's something that really grounds them, that they can fall back on, that they can recall from their youth when they maybe went to church. Or, you know, I know a lot of musicians whose parents were actually preachers. And so a lot of their training was developed actually singing in church choirs. So, you know, even when you talk about the music that you know, was in the rural areas of our country, like here in Tennessee, for example, church was always a solid foundation. And a lot of those hymns and a lot of the singing in unison and a lot of the celebration were all infused into these artists' music as they developed. They didn't forget that. They incorporated it. So, yeah, you know, the church.
Many years I've been looking for a place to call home, but I failed here to find it, so I must travel alone. I don't care for fine mansions on earth sinking sands. Lord, build me a cabin in the corner of glory land. Lord, build me a cabin in the corner of glory land. In the shade of a tree of life that it may ever stand, where I can just hear the angels sing and shake Jesus' hand. Lord, build me a cabin in the corner of glory land.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. More Americana music when we come back from break.
Blessed Lord, I'm not asking to live in the mist.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We're talking about Americana music. Lee David Zimmerman is the author of Americana Music, Voices, Visionaries, and Pioneers of an Honest Sound. This is the music of the Ebony Hillbillies. They're based in Queens and can be seen performing around New York City in clubs and also busking on the subway stations.
Oh, Shenandoah, I long to see you away, you rolling river. Shenandoah, I long to see you away. We're bound away across the wide Missouri. Oh, Shenandoah, I love your daughter.
Look, I mean, Americana is, if you really want to look at it in a very broad way, it's a huge, huge umbrella. It's not just, you know, the countrified stuff. It is gospel, but it's also soul. It's also R&B, and it's blues. It's really all-inclusive, and I think that's very important.
Well, there is a criticism of Americana music in that it is predominantly white.
You know, I have heard that, but I will tell you this. Every year I go to the Americana Fest in Nashville. Americana, the Americana Music Association, is kind of the cornerstone of Americana music. It's the de facto organization that brings people together, shares music and everything else. Many years in a row, they have an awards ceremony every year, and many years in a row, black artists, African-American artists, are the ones that are represented and celebrated. So I think this perception that it's white only may be a little close-minded, because if you really look at the icons and the forebears of this movement, I think that you'll see that African Americans are well represented. Not to say they shouldn't be even more well represented, you know, they're there, and they're certainly adding to the movement and bringing it forward, and no, it's a wonderful thing.
This is Kaya Cater singing St. Elizabeth.
Rise up and fall, St. Elizabeth. I am king to your call in the mist. I am slave to your land, and I will die by your hand, Elizabeth. The church, it did call me, Elizabeth, to sing in salvation.
As a music genre, how healthy is Americana music now? Is it selling a lot? Is it still niche?
You know, the music, everybody tells me this, musicians tell me this, that the music business is really broken. You don't have a lot of major labels anymore. The whole mechanism of the business, which was once defined by major labels like Warner Brothers and Columbia and MCA, that's really no longer the case. Commercial radio isn't playing anything except the biggest stars, and the oldie stations are only playing the oldies. I think, though, as a genre, to answer your question, I think that it is healthy to an extent. There's limited airplay. Most of the country stations don't play what we're defining as Americana. They're playing what some of us call frat rock. It's guys with cowboy hats, but it's a stereotype almost, not a lot of depth. So country radio stations still tend to program that sort of thing. There are, I think that the airwaves that do give voice to Americana music are stations like yours. We have one here in East Tennessee, WDVX, which plays a lot of Americana music of all stripes.
You paint a picture in your book, Americana Music, that there still is a very healthy scene out there. They may not be flying private jets and enjoying the lifestyle of the rich and famous, but they have an audience. They're able to play music and interact with people who understand what it is, understand a point of view.
Well, I mean, if we're talking in terms of popularity as far as following is concerned, as far as the emergence of, you know, this populist feeling that I referred to before, I think it is very healthy. I'm just not sure how that translates into sales of great magnitude. How many country artists are selling enough records to qualify for a gold record plaque? You know, nowadays you measure success if they sell 30 or 50,000 albums. You know, a gold record signified sales of a million copies. You had platinum albums. I mean,
well, those days are gone. Those days are gone. So how does it work? How do they find audiences, and how do they make a dollar?
Live, through live performance. That's where they sell the most product. That's where they attract their legions of admirers. People come to see them in concert, which is why so many artists are constantly on the road. The road, the personal appearances, that's the key, where people can see them up close, hopefully have an opportunity to interact.
But we still have house concerts where, it can be very small, personal, a high quality experience. You don't have to put out a lot of money. These are guys, they're not that different than the original Americana artist, like Woody Guthrie. They're traveling musicians, they're hardworking guys, interacting with the public one gig at a time.
That's what it's all about.
Lee David Zimmerman is the author of Americana Music, Voices, Visionaries, and Pioneers of an Honest Sound. I'm David Martin Davies. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio.